Ladies and gentlemen, with that gavel, I have just convened the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development for April the 23rd, 2015. We are gathered here today for the purpose of a public hearing. It's invited testimony on Senate Bill 5520, the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, ballot measure 91 implementation. It's obvious that we do not have a full complement of folks. The House just left the floor, and given the paucity of time and the complexity of the issue, though, we're going to go ahead and begin. Ms. Dyster, you want to give us any opening remarks?
Madam Co-Chair, generally, we have invited OLCC back to talk a little bit more about their best estimates at this time for what it looks like it's going to take in terms of staffing and budgetary resources to implement recreational marijuana legalization at this juncture. Obviously, the Policy Committee on Measure 91 implementation has not yet completed its work and may very well have some additional items that may augment or otherwise change this particular proposal. And those things will have to be incorporated on the back end as those conclusions are drawn. But as of this point in time, we didn't really want to delay the conversation any further because we have to start coming to some conclusions about the more basic aspects of staffing and implementation and what kinds of resources are going to be needed by the agency to do this for their budget.
Thank you very much. Mr. Marks, and any lifelines you deem appropriate for the purpose of presentation.
I will call on my lifelines.
Thank you. And while you're getting settled, I believe that we may have someone who has taken advantage of the Bring Your Children to Work Day today. And if you would like to stand up and just say who you are and where you're from, the committee would like to welcome you. And you're from where, middle school? Well, welcome to our committee. This is a budget committee, and we are talking about the Oregon Liquor Control Commission today, and I'm sure that folks will help you if you've got any questions, but we appreciate you being here today.
Thank you.
Mr. Marks.
Chair Johnson, members of the committee, thank you for the record. Stephen Marks, Executive Director of OLCC. With me is Bill Schutte, our OLCC economist, and Dustin Ball, our CFO analyst. We have in front of you a detailed iteration now of our marijuana budget. Last time when we presented to you, we gave you sort of the general parameters of law and policy and the estimates that were initially included in the governor's budget. So we look forward to moving forward with this and giving you the overview. This is presented as a sort of comprehensive program plan based on our work looking at Colorado and Washington and our needs in the state. It reflects our identified needs to implement the recreational program on time and on an intensive schedule.
Let me just stop you there so that I can pay attention to the rest of your presentation. This budget reflects OLCC's needs right now. Does this anticipate a lot of policy guidance from the Joint Committee on Marijuana, or how can you differentiate this budget absent seeing the full suite of recommendations that the Joint Committee is making?
Great question. Always a danger to predict the legislature, but I'll try. So first of all, this reflects implementation of Measure 91. Itself. There's a discussion, if I look at the commission recommendations that we have made to the special committee or the joint committee on Measure 91, and there are discussions, they haven't taken votes on the matters of recommendation, but generally I'd say those line up directly with this. There is an issue about whether they would grant peace officer status for our new marijuana inspectors, but if they do not, the budget doesn't change on that personnel item. We have one request that they had more discussion about, and I would characterize it as on the back burner, and that was the permitting of clerks that sell at the retail, that would sell at retail, and whether we should permit them, like we do with bartenders and our permittees in alcohol facilities. We would like, the commission has recommended that they do that, and right now that is not included in this budget.
Would it be fair to say then that what the committee continues to wrestle with are policy issues that would not affect this basic budget presentation?
I think that's a fair characterization from what I know at the moment. And no, it seems to be right about at that level.
Thank you.
So continuing, this budget proposes full integration of the new marijuana program across our divisions and across our alcohol system of our alcohol management structure. That will provide great leveraging of our existing structure and efficiencies for us in implementation. It includes a significant one-time startup costs and IT development for the online licensing system and the traceability seed-to-sale system that will travel with the plants and the process of growing, producing, retailing marijuana in this state, recreational marijuana.
That absolutely begs the question, whenever anymore you say IT in front of a legislative panel, somebody gets out a garlic and a crucifix. So my question to you is, in your ensuing presentations, is there a detailed business case for how this is all going to work and where the vendor is going to come from, et cetera, et cetera? And has anybody associated with this read the autopsy for Cover Oregon?
We have a silver bullet in that we have consulted with both legislative, fiscal, and CIO's office. We have met all the stages of the gatekeeping process with them that have been put into place. It is truncated because we had to do it in a shorter amount of time. We have a very complete business case that we can provide you, and Nathan Ricks of the policy staff in the marijuana program can illuminate on the detail there if you need further detail. But we've done our due diligence to date. We have met all the stages of the accountability process for it. We are hiring a business analyst and a quality assurance consultant for the process. In fact, I think we have one of those completed now and is now on board with the funding you gave us earlier this session.
Thank you. I'm going to ask the professional staff to flag that as something that we may want to come back and revisit, just to give the committee confidence that we are not embarking on yet another unfulfilled promise of IT.
And co-chairs, if I may, our plan in the legislative fiscal office is to continue to monitor the items for which resources have already been forwarded, as well as take a look at the IT-related items in the agency's budget. The our legislative fiscal office IT staff will be providing an overview memo with recommendations about what kinds of follow-ups might be necessary in the event of approval of packages when you consider the agency's budget and work session.
Thank you.
I would just note that this budget, the revenues cover the costs and include the cost of our startup borrowing with 2% interest paid back to the liquor fund from which we borrowed earlier. Marijuana program budget is $10.5 million. 41% of this proposed budget is personnel. There are 33 positions, new positions associated with it, and fully 59% of this is service and supplies, capital, and one-time costs included. If you looked at just the program itself and where we would be in the future, we're probably looking at current biennial, next biennial cost of $7.5 million for the base marijuana program itself. 33 positions total. We have seven marijuana policy division positions, four financial services, 13 in additions in enforcement and licensing, four agency shared services, and five administrative and assistant support services. offices.
You've got a communications section. Why does marijuana need its own communications? Your presentation begs the question, are you going to be dividing the house in half, or does it become an integrated control agency? How are you going to treat your internal administrative functions?
We're fully going to integrate the marijuana program across the alcohol programs, and later in our presentation we'll show you how those functions lay into the existing divisions of the OLCC.
So I say again, how come you need a public information officer unique to marijuana?
We have a tremendous amount of both in-state and out-of-state national interest in this issue. We have a considerable interest from licensees. If you look at our work, we did 11 public engagements across the state, the commission itself. We've had over 500 applicants to be a part of the Rules Advisory Commission. We're also working with the money that you appropriated to us prior to do the public education, coordinate the public education campaign for the personal grow and possession for home grow of 4 plants and 8 ounces. So we're moving forward with the contract with the firm that will work with us and the state agencies and nonprofits in the industry to carry out that education campaign. So there's a considerable burden put on, additional burden and interest put on the agency by the addition of the marijuana program.
Thank you.
So I'll have Bill Schutte talk in a little bit of detail about what these new positions are and the divisions and what they'll be doing for us.
For the record, Bill Schutte, economist with the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. I just want to point out the 33 positions as a comparison. Washington system currently implemented has about 55 positions dedicated directly to marijuana. Colorado also has 55 positions directed to marijuana as far as process. So 33 from a scale related to population, size of the state, size of the industry, we think we're, I guess, in the ballpark. Talking about the seven. Yes.
Writing the job description for some of these is going to be kind of uncharted waters. It's not exactly like you go to the template book for an accounting specialist. Talk a little bit about how you're going to, you know, is the opening question, where did you go to university during the 60s?
Chair Johnson, members of the committee. There are some very specific job descriptions that actually have been written already. The marijuana program director, the policy analyst, the rules coordinator, the public information officer. Those are in place as part of our fiscal year 2015 request. The data analyst, someone is basically has to have data skills, ability to query large databases. Access national databases for stuff like public health and DUI. Compliance specialist, someone with a basic enforcement background or that type of education, but a lot of it will be learning on the job. These will literally be positions that will invent themselves. One of the positions that we added in as part of this request is a testing labeling specialist after meeting with our counterparts in Washington. That has turned into a big workload up there. Literally, there are thousands of different labels coming in that they have to be screened and looked at to make sure that they meet the different rules and regulations.
Mr. Schutte, following on your comment that these are going to be jobs that invent themselves, have you given any consideration to making any of the ones with the more nebulous job descriptions limited duration so that there is not an employment contract formed if you have people that don't do well on spontaneous job description generation?
All the positions we're contemplating here, with the exception of the HR analyst, which is a limited duration, are contemplated to be permanent positions. We do have a process in the state hiring within the 6 months that are monthly job reviews that will allow us to provide that sort of analysis. And so we will have to pay special attention to that 6 month trial service period to make sure that they are actually, as you said, up to the job, so to speak.
Uh, Continuing on,
for financial services positions, these will be primarily to specific to the tax collection, the tax where you'll probably refer to it as an excise tax for marijuana, $35 an ounce. Accounting technician, leading auditor. This system is basically based off of our wine and beer tax collection. So we're using a lot of the models for alcohol to set up our existing structure for marijuana, or our proposed structure for marijuana. 13 enforcement and licensing investigation specialist. They will come on initially as license investigators, and depending on the workload and need, some will remain license investigators while others will be moved to enforcement, either in the Portland office or in the regional offices, depending where the licenses start to be located at. We felt a need that based on the additional 33 positions, we had to add something to the actual agency infrastructure. So human resource specialist, this was going to be the limited duration position for 12 months to help with the recruitment of all the rest of these. An IT help person for computer problems, that sort of thing. APMP, administrative policy and process, this is our hearings unit. We expect that with this, based on experience in especially Washington and Colorado, that there will be several license denials not meeting criteria, so we thought we had to beef up that section as well. And then given the enormous procurement needs that we're currently facing, procurement specialist in general services. And then,
so are you going to have a different appeal process for marijuana than you do for denials of your alcohol licenses?
I think a lot of that, committee, a lot of that still has to be developed in rule, but we envision a similar type of process as for alcohol as for marijuana. And then to finishing up, five administrative and assistant support positions. Again, this is to handle the basic logistics, administrative assistants, processors, things to support the program, again, based on experience from Washington and Colorado.
Mr. Schutte, when you guys get ready to draft rule, it strikes me that you get a little bit of a fresh start. I know that there has been a lot of criticism of some of the enforcement ability of OLCC in urban areas where you have bad actors, and the conduct of the licensee does not conform to community standards. Have you thought about using this opportunity to perhaps put a little more beefy regulation to help confirmation to those community standards?
Madam Chair, Steve Marks, Director, OLCC. We have thought about that. You know, we expect that we're going to have a different kind of sanctioning system associated with the recreational marijuana program out the gate. You know, our alcohol program is a very progressive sanctioning system. It's highly detailed. It's evolved in its own law at this point, and we don't have that experience with marijuana. So to the extent that we can look at clarity for that system that helps us both clear out the bad actors and help meet our primary mission of making sure they're educated and reaching compliance through our inspection program. That's what we're looking for, but Bill's right. We got to put this part of the program together in our rulemaking, and I've challenged at least the staff to think about the kinds of sanction system we want and the ability to define our own future separate and apart from alcohol.
So moving on to the program supply and services, and just as a kind of a foreshadowing, I'll be looking at the cost in the GRB compared to our current proposal and what the differences exist, but just as an overview of what the other supplies and services will be. We are be looking at $1.9 million in IT contracts. All the IT will be contracted out. I will address a little bit on the garlic question later on when we do the comparison, but that IT, those IT contracts will include the traceability system, that's a term we're using now in place of seed to sale, licensing system, tax collection, and electronic payment. estimated for these $1.9 million contracts are estimated from similar contracts that were enacted in Colorado and Washington, and current proposals by different contractors for systems that we have out there. We're anticipating $480,000 in a biennium for DOJ cost. Right now, we're being billed about $20,000 a month. We expect that to continue, so that continues out to the entire biennium. We have thrown in $300,000 for consulting and contract services, expertise that we do not have at the agency that we can get on a short-term basis, including developing DUI information, testing standards, and potential support for the advisory groups. One of the additional asks that we're looking for that was not included in the governor's recommended budget is $636,000 in capital construction for tax payments and collection at the front desk reception. This was a previous project that we were looking at. We'd like to reconfigure that project to beef up basically the security of the front desk. In our visits with Washington, approximately 30% of their tax receipts in any given month are coming in as cash. Given our revenue estimates, that could be $400,000 a month, and we have very serious security concerns about that, and we feel this is a necessary requirement to meet those concerns.
Does it trouble you at all that this remains such a cash-intensive undertaking? It strikes me that part of ballot measure 91 was to kind of regularize this in our economy, and bundles of cash bespeaks a darker time.
Yeah. Chair Johnson, committee, we are reflecting the reality, I guess, of the situation. We hope that this is a condition in flux. We were hoping for a while that many banks would come over and be able to support the marijuana industry. Unfortunately, with the pullout of MBank, it looks like these things seem to be going in reverse. What we were told in Washington was that there are some banks that will not deal with marijuana growers and retailers, and there are some marijuana and retailers and growers that will not deal with banks, and hence the cash issue.
Why did MBank abandon this initiative?
Chair, committee, we don't know that for sure. I have read some press articles that suggest the feds have come out with their own recommendations for how banks are to deal with this, and there are certain risk management requirements that are being imposed or being recommended to banks that some banks may find too onerous and are taking a second look of whether they want to be involved in this industry or not. But that's just a press release that I've read at this time. These are future discussions that we definitely will have to have with the banking industry out there.
I still am puzzled by the capital construction of $400,000 a month in cash. It's great that you beef up your front desk, and I presume we're talking about the facility in Milwaukee.
Yes.
With that level of cash floating around, as I'm walking from the parking lot into the Fort Knox that is your reception area, what's my vulnerability there? I mean, this just strikes me as an odd construct. You fortify the building, but your parking lot is, I can picture it easily in my mind's eye, that ain't exactly Fort Knox.
Chair Johnson, committee. We are, our first step in this plan is to hire an architect to look at all the concerns and security, including the parking lot. That is a good point. I guess, frankly, we hadn't thought about that, but that should be considered. A part of this request, too, and part of the budget request will contain armored car services. We're not sure exactly how this system will work in process, but we were advised very heavily by our Washington counterparts that we will have to have some contingencies security-wise for enabling receipt of large amounts of cash.
Do you have any issues, assuming that over the course of a week you accumulate a substantial amount of cash, and then I presume when you're talking about armored car services that this is state cash going to a financial institution? Are there any issues there?
Chair Johnson, committee, these are things we continue to look at. Again, we were reflecting our experience with Washington. This is just something, this will again be one of those works in progress. But we thought for security purposes, our own people and people bringing cash into the facility itself, that we would need some sort of capital improvement for that. But there will be many considerations that we will have to look at.
I might suggest that you visit with the Federal Reserve Bank. They had some very interesting arrangements with fencing where a car would come into a sally port basically and be cleared before it could then move farther into the interior of the banking operation. I think they pulled out that sally port in the Portland branch of the Fed, but their security in handling large amounts of cash might be instructive.
Yes.
Madam Chair, if I might add, with our Rules Advisory Committee, we're going to be drawing on, we have a business subgroup that we're actually going to now, with MBank's pullout, have to spend more extensive time looking at financial services, looking at how we can reduce the cash and the timing of the cash coming through the system and payments. So we are going to have a more intensive focus on that within the system of grow, processing, and movement of cash through the industry itself and then to us in taxes. We will be looking at this through our internal steering committee that we put together to work on integration. So we've already formulated that committee just this last week. So,
thank you. Please continue, Mr. Shade.
And then finally, we do have the $1.4 million payback from the fiscal year 2015 allocations. I'll talk a little bit about that later. Again, this is currently being borrowed from the liquor fund and will be repaid at the end of the 15-17 biennium. So I'll talk about some of the differences between the governor's recommended budget, things that we've learned since then, and our current proposal. Just as a little bit of background, the governor's recommended budget was based on estimates that we've made over the last 2 or 3 years. This subject has been at the forefront of several legislative sessions. We tried to refine those estimates as part of the Financial Estimates Committee, the information that went into the voters pamphlet. But the reality is, when these estimates were made, first of all, the initiative had not passed, and then second of all, even Colorado and Washington had not begun implementation of their programs. So since then, we have learned quite a bit, and we're applying it to this budget. The first difference is the GRB personnel cost was then $30.5 million, 28 positions. Our current budget proposal personnel cost, which we've already outlined, is $4.3 million, or 33 positions. The difference is two more positions for agency support, HR, and hearings division, two more positions specific to marijuana implementation, our data analysts and our testing labeling specialist, one more position in licensed services for processing. And one of the bigger differences is position start times that will be adjusted to start earlier in fiscal year 2016, the beginning of the biennium, to process licenses. One key message we got from especially Washington is they were completely overwhelmed with the number of license applications that came in during the first month. So we want to be as prepared as we can for that. Continued differences between the governor's budget and our current proposal, information technology. The GRB had $1.4 million in technology cost. We are proposing $1.9 million. The difference is online licensing, tax collection, payment systems will be built by contractors versus the original plan for in-house development. Again, these recommendations came from Department of Administrative Services, Legislative Fiscal Office, and many others in state government. We believe that this is going to be lead to a more timely delivery, that we are in a very tight timeline with this, and less stress on current agency IT resources, which are majority of which are devoted to the tracking and payment of liquor. Related to the garlic question, we have also added a quality assurance contractor to monitor the progress of these projects. This is now a requirement. Other differences between the two GRB and the current proposal. We did not include the addition of an overhead estimate in the original GRB. Again, we didn't have a good idea what the structure would look like. We encouraged by Department Administrative Services and Legislative Fiscal Offices that not all of our overhead, our management costs, and our shared services should be borne by liquor. Some of it should be borne by marijuana. However, the difficulty is that given the absence of real data at this point, we had to do an estimate. So our estimate was based on the new FTE coming in, basically 11% of the total now. We're going to apply this to program manager personnel costs, shared services such as facilities maintenance and shared motor pool costs, total $465,000. It's important to note this will be added to the marijuana fund but subtracted from the liquor fund. So a net zero balance as far as the state agency is concerned.
Mr. Schutte, I should know the answer to this and I don't. Do you avail yourselves of my favorite information technology project, Scenic? Also called, that we keep changing the name to hide the guilty, the State Enterprise Technology Center. This was the amalgamation of all of the various platforms, and you're charged by DAS a certain prorata based on employees and computing time.
Chair, committee, I am not aware of that. There may be others in here that could answer that question. I know that we are involved very heavily with State DAS IT. And others. So,
My only caution is that in another subcommittee of Ways and Means, we are doing quite an in-depth review of DAS's service charges for people that access that centralized computing capability. And there are costs that are rising in the area of 85% over last year. If you are subject to that and you are now adding this much more of a book of business, with any concomitant computing requirements, you better make sure you know how the charges are going to look.
Madam Chair, I just had worked on that project a little bit in my past life, understanding that we are largely independent from a lot of that process at this point. We are working ourselves over to some of the enterprise needs to be a good state player with them. We're moving to the new email system. Statewide, but we are not fully ingrained with our IT systems.
Well, watch your back, yeah. Buck Rogers. The charges are unbelievable.
Yes.
And then finally, as we brought up before, the addition of the capital expenditure, which was not included in the original governor's recommended budget of $636,000 for the reception area security remodel. These costs will also include the enlistment of a professional architect to design services and develop security, both for the inside of the building and for the outside of the building. And what probably the biggest difference, you can blame the economists that probably did the original fiscal impact for this, was that the GRB repayment for fiscal year 2015 was originally forecast to be $333,000. We are now up to $1.3 million. So we realize we do have to pay that $1.3 million back during the next biennium. Again, this is a loan from the liquor fund. And we expect it to be repaid by the end of the 2015-17 biennium. I believe that was part of the reconciliation bill. And it will include 2% interest as well. So just a little bit about...
Mr. Schutte, may I interrupt you, please? Co-Chair Gomberg.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I just wanted to go back to the differences between the governor's proposed budget and where we are today. And I appreciate you highlighting those distinctions. I also took note of a report from our own Legislative Revenue Office that was issued last September. And they, at that time, were projecting costs in the range of about $7.4 million, which seems somewhat in line with what the governor recommended. Are you in a position to suggest where their projections were distinct from the governor's projections and how we got to where we are now? And if you're not, then I'm happy to have you report
Johnson,
back to us later.
Representative Gomberg, I am not in that position. I believe, however, that the Legislative Revenue Office basically took the governor's projections on that. At that point, but
again,
I can follow up on that. If you
Let me just, for your edification, I'm referencing a report in September of 2014, and it was LRO report 3-14.
Okay.
Thank you. And I apologize for not getting you that in advance, but...
That's right. So I just want to talk a little bit about marijuana program revenue. There is a certain amount of anxiety of having to repay this $10.5 million. We are continuing, after discussion with Legislative Revenue Office, to stay with the $16 million expected revenue from tax receipts in the 2015-17 biennium. Just a note, other estimates have ranged from $12 million up to $38 million. These are annual estimates. The legislative revenue estimate initially was $22 million. It was cut by 25% for the startup of the program itself, so it is, at least in my opinion, somewhat conservative. I will say that we have some recent information from Colorado that when we adjust for Colorado's population, and based on just the sales of total ounces that have occurred over the last 12 months in Colorado, and apply the Oregon tax rate, we would be seeing about $17 million. So there is some, at least real data that suggests we can meet this target. But again, this revenue projection is speculative. I'll put it that way. The second part that we
Mr.
have,
Schutte,
yes.
I know you're a very conservative fiscal guy. What's Plan B? Do you guys have a Plan B? What if these revenues don't materialize? What if the black market stays so robust it strips opportunity out of the retail sector?
Chair Johnson, committee, that is a very good question. I guess our Plan B is to continue to update the legislature and others on our progress to make sure that we are meeting our goals, especially from the revenue end. But, and this is speculation now on my part, that if we do not meet our revenue goals, we would ask for an extension of the repayment probably into the 17-19 biennium. And if it looks like it is a more permanent solution, situation, if the revenues are not materializing, we will obviously have to cut agency resources.
Would you object to a budget note that laid out a reporting schedule so that it was predictable for the legislature? It has been my experience that often on the any new undertaking, the agency is reluctant to come forward, and we wait until the car has driven off the cliff to announce that there's a problem. So would you be adverse to having a formalized reporting mechanism on revenues?
Chair Johnson, we'd absolutely welcome that. It's going to be important to us that the legislature is fully informed all along the way here. And, you know, with this startup, I can just say I've appreciated the legislative and DAS expertise in helping us put this startup in place. We know we got to do it responsibly. I know there's a lot of concerns, so we'd welcome that opportunity to keep you fully informed along the way.
Okay. Co-Chair Gromberg.
Thank you again. I'm co-chair. And you know, this revenue aspect of the question is fascinating. I get that this is a committee that talks about where to spend dollars, and there are other committees that look at how to raise dollars. But one of the things that made us crazy during the recent campaign was the wide variety of suggestions on how much money was going to be generated by this program. And the more conservative estimates that came in, one, again, that same legislative revenue report suggested between 17.4 and 25.9. I was also looking at the Oregon State Financial Estimate Committee that thought we were looking at between 17 and 40. Would you agree with the co-chair's assessment that you're taking a very conservative look at this, or would you characterize your 18.4 number differently than conservative?
Chair Johnson, Representative Gomberg, this $16 million from tax receipts, in my opinion, is a conservative estimate. As I said before, those numbers that you had just recently cited, we took the mid-range of those from the Legislative Revenue Office, and then of those numbers, we reduced it by 25% for startup. So the projection actually for the Legislative Revenue Office, I think, was closer to $22 million, but it was reduced to $16 million for the first biennium of operations to account for those startup. Related to the licensing area, we have increased that. The original estimate out of the Legislative Revenue Office was for 340 licenses. We're not sure where that came from. I believe that was just they were assuming retail licenses. Based on the experience in Washington and Colorado, we are expecting in excess of 2,000 license applications and about 1,300 licenses to be approved by the state. Each one of those licenses will carry a cost of $250 initially for the application fee, non-refundable, and $1,000 on an annual basis. Actually, the first round of growers licenses, which we expect between January, February, and April, will go through a second round of renewals, which also have added to that revenue estimate. So our estimate for license revenue is a bit more aggressive than the previous one, but we believe it's realistic. We also believe it's what our workloads are based on, too, and we're going to have to deal with.
All right, thank you.
Follow-up.
Well, no, I just had an observation that we may be missing at least one small opportunity. In my own business, my bank charges me a service fee when I show up with too much cash.
Yeah, and change extra. Mr. Schutte, just the numbers that you reeled off are fascinating to me for a couple of reasons. First of all, when the doors open and you're able to deal with your first licensees, you have as much pent-up demand as you just indicated. My curiosity, and you don't have to answer this, but I just share with you, my curiosity is if there's that much demand and not everybody is going to get satisfied, what does that say about the potential for a residual black market? Secondly, if there's that much interest in being a licensee, is $250 too cheap? The market seems to suggest that maybe, you know, a factor of 10. Why not recoup or generate some of the promised revenue at the front end, at the licensing point? It seems to me if someone finds that onerous, you've got at least 2,000 other people behind him happy to pay the freight. Why did you set that so low?
Chair Johnson, committee, the $250 application fee was set in the initiative itself, so
it is okay.
In statute, and so is the $1,000 licensing fee.
And one other question that it begs is the $250, I wonder if that is any reflection of the concomitant societal costs of the drug driving and neighbor-to-neighbor nuisance beefs and all of the other ancillary issue that may accompany the implementation, and you don't have to respond. Senator Monroe.
I know it's said in the statute, but it is a statute. And my understanding is that the legislature can change statutes.
Thank you. Okay, please continue.
So given those estimates, our current revenue projection is now $18.4 million. That, given our budget, would allow for us potentially a $7.7 million availability for distribution. We've outlined the different funds. It was similar to what we've presented before with some different numbers in it. But again, we have been very tentative in our remark that we're not sure how much revenue will be available for distribution. But this is our best projection at this point, given our current agency request and the revenue projections that we have.
So we wanted to remind you
Mr. Marks, before you start, Senator Hansel,
please. Can we go back to that last slide? On that distribution on the bottom, where each various entities, could you fill me in? Where's the history on that? Is that just whose plan is that? I guess where does that come from?
Chair Senator Hansel, this again, the formula for distribution is a percentage set by the initiative itself. So 40% to the Common School Fund, and I'd have to rattle them off, but it gets 10-15% to all these different funds.
Thank you.
Very good. Moving forward to the timeline. So we wanted to remind you of the timeline. This is still pretty concurrent with what we presented to you before in terms of our intentions, but reminder that in July of 2015, recreational marijuana use becomes legal in Oregon. The OLCC has no particular responsibilities around that date except to help execute the public education campaign with other state agencies, other governmental entities, and industry partners. On October 20 of 2015.
Mr. Marks.
Yes, ma'am.
Let's go back to July the 15th. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you just stated that you don't have a real role, your coordinators and conveners. How far along are you with your public relations education piece? Because it seems to me that there's a huge segment of the population that thinks on July the 1st they can run down to somewhere and buy a big bag of dope.
We are just finalizing acquiring the contractor to help with that campaign, and we have used an expedited process since you gave us the funding to do so. So we're just beginning to have the first meetings on what that looks like.
If it has dancing cardboard clouds and a woman playing a guitar, you're a dead man.
I've heard that before. Thank you.
Please continue.
October 2015 is licensed investigation staff will be hired. We'll move forward and then begin training them before the end of the year. We actually have a DPSST training time reserved for them in November, December time frame. December 2015, our online license.
What kind of a certificate will the DPSST training produce for those folks?
So this is still subject to legislative clarification. Right now, ballot measure 91 does not include peace officer authority. It just has inspectors for us. We are asking, and we've asked the legislative committee to provide us peace officer authority for our liquor inspectors. Now, the legislative statutory clarification that we want to make in statute would just have regulatory inspectors that would cover both alcohol and liquor in the same certification from DPSST. DPSST currently has done a job task analysis and a curriculum for our alcohol inspectors and license and personnel. It is we do 2 weeks on their campus where it's our training, 4 weeks of DPSST training. A lot of that's civil rights, and then there's also some tactical training that's provided to them. And then we'll have another week of training once they probably return to OLCC at that point. So we need to clarify that in statute to make it happen. That's one of the issues that I would say, I think I said at the outset, whether the legislature provides us with, and they're talking about a more limited form of peace officer authority for our marijuana inspectors that would only apply to criminal citations, but we have administrative. So, when we have peace officer authority, that generally gives us some criminal citation ability. We would only apply that to the licensees, to their workers, to the people they do business with in the transportation system. Unlike alcohol, where we now are limiting, we're able beyond our licensees to, cite you for public intoxication outside of our inspection of facilities. So it's a narrowing.
Why should it be any different? You said you're going to try to integrate marijuana. A public person publicly intoxicated on one substance versus another, that's a distinction without a difference to me.
Now, Madam Chair, the commission did ask for peace officer authority, just like we have for alcohol. They've had a discussion that would narrow that scope. What I can say is, with the extensive home grow issue that's being put in place, we're never going to be staffed to have responsibilities for that at this level, and it does at least make clear that we wouldn't have those responsibilities to enforce that. December 2015, our online licensing system will be developed and turned over to OLCC. That's important because we need to train our new staff on how it operates. We also will look forward to providing some training and education to the prospective licensees. January 2015, we'll deploy the online traceability system live. As a part of issuance of a license, the licensees will be tested on their acumen with this traceability system. January 4th, 2016, we'll begin to receive.
Mr. Director, if a licensee doesn't get an A on the test, what happens?
They fail and will deny a licensure until they can perform adequately on the system that provides for tracking and auditing of.
And how many bites at the apple does a potential licensee get?
Good question. That'll be a subject of our rulemaking.
I need...
Senator Hanselman.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I should know this, but traceability, what I'm not familiar with that.
We're talking about basically barcodes and RFID technology to track product throughout the system. So like you see on barcodes on pills and, you know, the RFID radio transmitter frequencies or electronic transmitters, so we can do counts readily and fast, so you can then label products at its stage in life from the grower and the grower's packaging to the next stage. If it goes to a processor or a retailer, we can trace those lots of marijuana to their next stage. We will have tracking and manifests on their transportation between the various processors until it reaches retail. Once it's sold in retail, then we will no longer track the product. January 4th, so the online system, licensing system, will go live then as well. April 2016, we'll issue or anticipate issuing our first grower licenses around that time frame. We also anticipate certifying or licensing testing facilities. This is another legislative statutory clarification, but we anticipate that OMMP and their ORLAP program will provide the third-party certification for labs that will test for the potency of the product and also for pesticides and microbials and other products that are unsafe for humans, so that we can ensure the quality of the product moving forward. So they, I think the intention then is to give us or OMMP the authority to license these labs that would then test the product and be part of our traceability system.
Mr. Director, if a field, if a producer fails, there's pesticide present, there's critters of some kind, do they get a period of corrective action, or is that field red tagged, or how's that work?
Good question. This is another one that's probably going to be left to rulemaking. But if we have a product that doesn't match the quality standards we need, we're going to have to pull the product out of the consumer system.
And, Chair, if I may, based on our visit to Washington, they will have a couple different times to be able to retest the product itself, is what they do up in Washington. And again, if it fails, then that product will have to be destroyed, and it's again part of the traceability system, part of our inspection process to be able to monitor that. So
I'm just thinking ahead, is that one of the job openings of burning the bad product? I'm just thinking about life after the legislature.
If they solve the peace officer authority issue, we might be able to answer that question for you. Where are we at? April 2016, certified and licensed testing facility. So June of 2016, we think we'll issue our first processor licenses around that time. So these will be the folks that are making either processing dried marijuana, making extracts, potentially edibles, although the edibles is going to be somewhat tricky for us, and we think may take a little longer to figure out how to bring those products into the market.
Is there any talk about harmonizing the requirements for commercial kitchens? I'm thinking we passed a bill this session that loosens some of the strictures for people that are cooking for farmers markets from having to have all of the requirements of a commercial kitchen. Can I be doing cannabinol-laced gummy bears in my kitchen and putting them out, or do I have to have a certified prep site the same way that people baking larger quantities? You can't cook in your own kitchen and put it into the food chain.
Correct. And we anticipate that ODA will continue to do all of their licensing for food product kitchens. We will license them for the production of or processing of edibles with marijuana products. So ODA will be concerned about the cross-contamination issues and other things with purity inside their current regulatory kitchen structure. So we'll have a dual structure for them.
Senator Hanselman.
You may have answered this, and I'm sure it's been asked before, but it just seems to me on that slide there's a significant disconnect, at least for me and then for others. It's on July 2015, recreational marijuana use is legal in Oregon. We go clear down a year and a half or thereabouts, and we issue the first retail license. So what happens then, and the rest, you know, for the next, for the year and a half from the time it's legal until we're issuing a license where somebody can legally buy it?
Chair Johnson, Senator Hansel, that's an issue within this. We have determined at the LLCC that we want to fully implement this compliant with the Cole Memorandum and federal law, and we've said we would take the time to get it right. If you see, we have a sequence of licensing that goes from grow to processor to retailer. It doesn't fit the timeline of ballot measure 91 in terms of individual home grow and home use. Our research suggests, I'm not suggesting that we would encourage this, but that there is no shortage of access to marijuana plants and seeds, access to marijuana in Oregon. It, however, is not legal to access marijuana, and that needs to be restated.
Follow?
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
My concern has been verified.
Please continue.
So you see in October 2016, we get to the issues of retail licenses. So we wanted to talk a little more detail about program integration. I think the next slide actually details it better, but this delineates that we're going to integrate the marijuana program into financial services enforcement and licensing process. If you look at the next slide, it actually shows the current FTE in each one of those divisions associated with the alcohol program, and then the positions we will be adding in the division for the marijuana program, and each one of them is in the purple blocks, and those are the jobs that Bill described to you earlier. You can see that we go from, we had one in the, or seven in the marijuana program, one in general services, financial services, four, public safety, the 33, and information services one, another one for administrative policy and processes, and one for human resource. I would note that this division slide does not include our retail or distribution system employees. So our total employee count goes from about 225 up to 258 FTE. And with that, I think we've described the implementation, the finances, the anticipated budget. I'd be happy to answer any additional questions.
Colleagues, additional questions for either Mr. Schutte or Director Marks? Okay. So that concludes your presentation for today's purposes.
It does for today's purposes. If you'd like, I could just talk a little better about the integration of our rules process with the system we have in place, or we can wait for that at a later time.
I have one question about that, and I think Senator Hansel does. Mr. Ball, we're not hearing from you on an informational hearing, are we?
Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee, for the record, Dustin Ball, the Chief Financial Office, and I don't have anything to add unless you have any questions for me.
Senator Hansel.
I really appreciate the work you're doing on it. I know there's been a lot of time, energy, and effort in working through the different things. At the same time, there is a committee that is meeting on policy of legislators. To what extent is there an interaction here between what you're doing and what the senators and representatives are doing on that committee? And I understand that they're running into some issues. In fact, the last three meetings have been canceled, is my understanding.
Chair Johnson, Senator
seems like
Hansel,
it's a disaster.
We've had a great deal of interaction with the committee. We made some 52 or 54 recommendations to the committee. I'm happy to say that the commission recommendations, primarily that were commission recommendations and technical recommendations, were all and are all being dealt with substantively. There has been a shift in focus now to medical, and dealing with the issues in the medical program system are taking some time, We expect them to shift back to our issues at some point, which are, I think, less controversial in nature. I hope they are, and that we can move forward with readily with the committee. But the working relationship has been very good on our issues. There's some extraneous issues with medical that are slowing things down.
Follow up.
Is there a possibility that what comes out of this policy committee could completely mess up what you guys do? For example, if they said, okay, we're going to start putting medical under OLCC, just put the whole thing in there. I mean, is there, I don't want to be a doomsdayer, but at the same time, all this work you've been doing, I hope we don't end up making life a whole lot more difficult.
Chair Johnson, Senator Hansel, I think all that work, depending on the shifts and puts between our system and medical, we're already prepared to help with that system if we make this investment in infrastructure and would share it for anything that is necessary that they want to do in medical, and whether that's OMMP's responsibility or ours, which I say is very dangerous to say, but or who's ever responsible for that. This technology you're investing in could be used either with a blind window in it from OMMP, or we could use it actively to help them trace in terms of the traceability system. We can certainly issue licenses across that. So I don't think there's a lot of additional cost to the function. There will be some. There will be more license applications if we had to take that responsibility on. We are not looking to take that responsibility on. We recognize that there are some significant issues around the medical programs that are being worked out by the committee, and we will implement the legislature's desire once they produce a product for us.
Okay. Colleagues? Senator Monroe.
Yeah, I'm looking at your overall request, 33 new positions and so on, and everything is so new, I'm wondering if maybe there's some appropriate way to phase in those new people instead of just hiring them all at once. And, you know, as the system develops, give you time to kind of make sure you're being prudent in the way you progress. You know, this issue was sold to the voters that it was going to make a boatload of money, and I'm really questioning the boatload of money. I would like to see, as you phase into your new operation, it pay for itself. We already gave you a considerable sum of money last year, and I would hope that as we get into this, that it is at least self-sustaining.
Madam Chair, Senator Monroe, it should be self-sustaining. I don't think we should run or operate this program without it being self-sustaining. I think we've scaled the program that fits. I think you know, I've heard Bill's estimates and the anticipated revenue to the best of the ability of forecasters, and we've analyzed the needs and potentials of the industry and the licensees. We're going to generate some revenue, and we're going to be close. I've said I don't have confidence in the $16 million number myself, but as we actually get licensees coming forward, we'll begin to get a better idea about who's going to participate in this system. That'll lead to the grow licensees being established, and once they have a product, we'll begin collecting the revenue stream from them. So we'll have a much better picture when we see about a year from now, when we see how many licensees we've approved for growing marijuana.
Sorry, I'm so skeptical.
Okay, colleagues, any other questions for either Director Marks or Mr. Schutte? There being none, Ms. Dyster, you want to give us a little preview of next week?
Madam Chair, I know for a fact that you will be seeing me on Thursday. I believe we are at this point tentatively scheduled to go into work session on the Employment Department's budget. I believe you may also be seeing me the day before on Wednesday to talk about the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And Monday and Tuesday, I don't know off the top of my head without running back to my office and looking at your
Monday, colleagues, Monday we're not meeting. And so there will be no committee on Monday.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much. Colleagues, any final comments? There being none, we're adjourned. Colleagues, any final comments? There being none, we're adjourned.